This is CliffCentral.com.
Let's meet a guy called Johnny Miller. I saw one of his works up on the wall of someone's house the other day, and I said, my God, that is a beautiful picture. It's like it's a drone picture of this wall. On the one side of the wall, you've got a township, dusty roads, children playing in this. You could just make out there's a whole lot of activity, and then there's this wall, and on the other side of the wall, there's this lush green suburban garden, and this much more extensive house, and it's beautiful. It's just a magnificent illustration of such an obvious inequality in society. I looked at this and I thought, well, this guy obviously has an eye for, you know, picking up things that only an artist could see some of the time, but that when we all see it, we go, wow, that's spectacular. That's where art becomes powerful and persuasive and makes you think and a whole lot of other things. So he grew up, you're originally from the U.S., right? But you're now based in Cape Town. Is that right, Johnny?
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
Johnny Miller is here. He's a photographer and an artist. It's very nice to meet you. I was very impressed when I saw this one picture of yours. Very good, man.
Thanks for having me here. It's sure. Really nice. And I'm so happy I'm following Two Girls, One Cup.
No!
That's, yeah, so thanks for setting that up for me, guys.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Really appreciate it. I was in the green room. I almost choked on my coffee.
You're welcome.
It'll be the same
No, podcast. It's good. It's a good, lighthearted intro to a
hey, my
serious
buddy,
topic.
My buddy brought that up. Don't look at me. She always brings up the dirtiest stuff. So you are, you're here on a Rotary Ambassadorial Scholarship, right? Studying anthropology, or is that done already?
Well, as you guys can hear from my accent, yes. I am from the States, and I came here in 2012. So I originally came on a Rotary Ambassadorial Scholarship.
Ago.
So I'm... when do you become South African, Gareth?
Today, if you want to.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you're going to swear me in.
Ask Sia, Mabali, and Ben and I.
Because someone in Cape Town the other day said 8 years.
Well, that's Cape Town.
No, Cape Tonians operate on a different setting.
What, Joburg is like 2-3 years?
Yeah,
it's expedited.
So I
came here to get my master's degree at University of Cape Town, fell in love with South Africa, and I'm living here now, so I'm permanent, basically.
Well, we're very happy to have you, man.
Thank you.
It's always good to have talented people around. How did you make the decision to come here, or what got you interested in us in the first place?
So I'm a photographer, and documentary works has always been my passion. When I had the opportunity to get my master's degree and pair it up with a country that's had incredible stories to tell, but a really high level of infrastructure and development, and it was not too far off, like sort of a culture and a lifestyle that I was used to living in the States, South Africa sort of came together.
Where in the U.S. you're from?
Seattle.
Okay, very good.
So the northwest part of the States near Canada.
Sure.
Yeah, and I fell in love with South Africa. I live in Cape Town, and I mean, it's my home, so I'm happy to be here.
You know, isn't it amazing how photography is just, it's apparently it's either the most or the second most popular hobby in the world. And it used to be an area where you had quite a lot of snobbery, and, you know, people used to carry around these very complicated and very expensive looking cameras, and some people still do. And they do take incredible pictures. I mean, look, Ben carries his little bag around.
I'm a snob.
Yeah, you are a snob. He now looks at us askance when we use our phones. But, I mean, a phone has now made it possible for people to take really high-quality photographs, even if they're not particularly good photographers. The difference, though, is that the composition of a great picture and the ability to create some kind of a feeling around it is something that very few people have. Most people are just taking selfies and posting them on social media.
No, I totally agree. And you're touching on two, I think, really important points. One is there's a great democratization of imagery that's happening right now. And it's actually sort of a personal sort of mission of mine through my organization, African Drone, to help sort of more people tell stories the same way that I told stories,
right,
which is directly tied to deregulation of the airspace as far as drones are concerned. But
I'm
then,
so with you on this one.
I'm happy to hear that because I'm about to go to this DroneCon conference in Midrand, and I think I'm probably going to be the turd in the punch bowl because there's a lot of
regulators, like civil aviation authority
CAA regulates the airspace. I have nothing bad to say about the CAA. Well, I'm not here to say it publicly, anything bad about the CAA, but there's a lot of vested interests in keeping particular people in positions of power. everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
But obviously my work focuses on inequality, and I see this regulatory environment and the ability of only certain people to have the money and the wherewithal to be able to fly legally as just another representation of power politics of inequality. So you've got a country with huge amounts of inequality, economic transformation lagging, and a lot of people who need jobs.
Right.
And here's an industry that's tailor-made with quite a small investment to be able to go out, take pictures of your house, someone's wedding, or, you know, I don't know, whatever you want to do with a drone and make a little bit of money at it.
Yeah, but construction sites.
Exactly.
So it's use it for anything. I mean,
almost completely impossible
and for someone
to
develop. I mean, like some people who grow up in situations where there's not a lot of money, for example, but they want to be able to fly, the closest they'll ever get is a drone.
Yeah, and I mean, the safety argument, which is what most people bring up as the reason why there are regulations.
Yeah, they're all talking about how drones are going to fly into the plane's engines and
exactly.
bring down a passenger jet.
Or but, we're going to strap a nuclear bomb onto a drone and do terrorism with it.
I have yet to hear about
one of these. Well, you know, the United States, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm promoting the – Jesus. I mean, let's not go down that rabbit hole, right? I'd rather talk about two girls, one cup. But the regulatory environment in the States is quite liberal,
yeah.
and there haven't been issues.
Right.
People are making money. People are being employed. No one's flying into jet engines, and
because
no one's using it for terrorism.
Technically, you taking that picture that I was describing earlier is illegal. Technically, you need a license to do that. Do you have a license?
I do have an RPL license, but I'm really glad that you brought up that it's really, really difficult for journalists, activists, yeah. and citizens to be able to take photos that need to be seen. And I think that's the second point that you brought up when you brought up earlier this democratization of imagery.
Yeah.
That opens up all these new stories from a new perspective that we sort of know exists but we haven't seen before. And I think that's what unequal scenes kind of caught people by surprise. Everyone in South Africa that I've talked to knows that there's dramatic inequality. Like, I drove here last night from the airport past Alex,
yeah.
And you drive right past and you see the Towers of Sandton behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But I hadn't seen anyone before 2 years ago take a drone photo from above. Although, you know, people like David Goldblatt have taken photos of Alex before. But to put that dividing line right in the center of the photo in a sort of compositional manner to create an aesthetic of inequality, which is kind of how I'm describing my work, was new and only really possible because I could afford a drone because it was so cheap at that point, which was about $2,000. Still a lot of money for a lot of people, mm-hmm. but a hell of a lot cheaper than renting a helicopter.
Absolutely. Okay, so the exciting thing about doing photography now, because we can get into this regulatory stuff later. I'm very pleased that you're going to represent on that side. And if you're going to be the turd in the punch bowl, you're probably carrying a lot of us with you as turds in the punch bowl. So do it, because I don't want these bureaucrats deciding how we should, first of all, spend our money, and second of all, how we should use the space above our own heads. You should be able to do what you want with that space. Who said it belonged to the government? Don't they already have an absolute sovereignty over so much? We shouldn't have to give them this.
That's a very U.S. type perspective.
Yeah.
And it's funny, you know, when you live in a foreign country, you sort, and I'm older, so right, you sort of assume a new identity in parts, but you also take parts of your old identity with you along, right? It's almost like a slipstream that comes behind you. And I'm realizing that I'm much more into sort of individual rights. I have that sort of ecosystem
right.
percolating in my brain.
Well, I think that's where most sensible people feel.
But there's definite sort of a, I don't want to say socialist kind of attitude that a lot of South Africans have, but a lot of people will put a lot of legitimacy in the state to make decisions on what's right in this country versus the states. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the drone issue is a perfectly apt one to describe that. So you've got a situation in this country, and I don't want to go into all the technical errata of drone flying, but you actually don't own the airspace above your home in South Africa.
You should.
Well, in America, it's federal. So you're in federal airspace the minute you leave the ground, and that means you're playing by federal rules, and the federal rules are quite liberal. Whereas in South Africa, you cannot be closer to 50 meters to a building. You can't be within 50 meters of a building. Essentially, the building owner owns that airspace 50 meters above his building. You can't be within 50 meters of people or roads.
Yeah, but I think that's okay, because you shouldn't be able to fly your drone through my garden and look through my bedroom window with it. That's obviously a privacy thing, right?
It's unclear whether 50 meters means if you're above 50 meters, you can above that airspace, or if it's a lateral distance.
Yeah.
Anyways, I don't want to get into it, but the privacy thing, I definitely I'm on board with you with the privacy thing.
Sure.
However, it does seem like a double standard when you can fly in a helicopter, an airplane, and take photos from above, but you can't with a drone.
Right.
So the reason they're getting the reason they're instituting these regulations is a safety issue.
Well, I don't know.
Rather than a privacy issue.
Good for you that you're going there. What I wanted get to was that these days there are so many different cameras that can do so many amazing things. Mm. You get these 360-degree cameras that almost make you feel like you're in the middle of a room with a whole lot of people around you. There are visual effects you can create now that we've never been able to create before. It's really like it would be like an artist suddenly getting a whole new palette of colors that were never visible to the human eye before. That's kind of how – it's the only way I could describe it if you had to look at the kind of old arts of painting and sculpture and all of those things. And photography is so great because ultimately you can render this stuff digitally and it can last forever. It doesn't deteriorate over time. It can be made into a huge big picture on a wall, or it can be made really, really small like a postage stamp. There's so much about photography that's exciting. I mean, do you just wake up in the morning and you've got a head full of ideas and you don't have enough time to do everything?
No.
No. You're running out of ideas already?
I'm totally out of ideas, so go to johnny.miller@gmail.com. No, I'm joking. I've got tons of ideas. It's finding time and resources to execute, obviously. I'm also really excited with sort of the digital revolution and the totally cool technical aspects of new photography. Some of my work, the Unequal Scenes work, has been pretty interestingly received in the art world.
Yeah.
And people aren't really sure what to make of it, which is kind of cool as well.
Because it makes them uncomfortable in many cases, right?
And not only the social aspect of it, but literally the medium itself.
Yeah.
So I'm not actually behind the camera lens when I take the photo, right?
Right.
So it's a remote-controlled operation, and I take the photo by proxy. And the idea that there's a non-human photographic actor flying in the sky...
Did it bother the artist?
...creating art is weird to people. Is it photography, or is it mapping, or is it... I mean, a satellite imagery photography? You know what I mean? Like, if someone is directing an image-making device to take an image, that to me is a representation or a writing with light, which is what photography actually means, right? But some people take a much more traditionalist view that you have to be behind the lens. You have to print it and show it in a gallery, for example. I didn't go to art school. I'm not coming from like a traditionalist background.
So the idea
that you could represent things digitally.
That's probably why we can actually have a conversation with you, because a lot of those people are so far up their own backsides that they don't make any sense anymore. And they're so in love with the idea of the art that they've forgotten that for most people this is a pure luxury that they don't need in their lives.
No, for sure. There's an ethics that goes into art that I think is important to unpack. It's not totally relevant to me, and especially not with Unequal Scenes.
So tell me about Unequal Scenes, because the one that I saw I've described, there must be a bunch of them. There's a collection, right?
Yeah. The one you saw was taken in Cape Town.
Okay.
Masipumalele is the township area on the left.
It's Hot Bay.
It's south. It's near Nordhook. And then Lake Michelle is a gated community with electric fencing. It's basically rich versus poor. That's the aesthetic of Unequal Scenes, unequalscenes.com. I've done it in 8 or 9 countries now, including the States. If you go to my website, you can see most of those countries represented. And the idea is pretty simple. I do a lot of research to find the most unequal scenes or the most unequal locations in each country. And by unequal, I mean basically wealth inequality, right? And that's represented by the types of housing that people have. So to unpack the word inequality, you could talk about racial, gender, sexual orientation, whatever. I'm pretty much
talking about wealth inequality
right. here, as represented by housing. And take the drone, fly safely above these areas, and get really amazing photos. And the idea that aesthetic...
This picture of Mumbai is just unbelievable.
Thanks. The aesthetic, though, is interesting because people have criticized this pretty heavily in a variety of ways. And one, they say, well, what is this different than going onto Google Earth and taking a snapshot? So actually, I'd be interested to hear your opinion
Me?
Yeah, I mean, what makes this project different than going onto Google Earth?
Who cares about my opinion? Because you're composing the contents of the picture yourself. You're deciding what you're going to keep in and what you're going to put out. It's amazing. And you've got lines in here, and there's, I mean, this one that you've got of Alexandra, there's the hostels, right? Mm. I mean, that's just beautifully put together. The light, you've got some shade in the top corner. You've got all these shacks. You've got the hostel in the middle. I mean, it's a very looming, very powerful picture.
Thank you. Yeah.
You could use any technology. You could get up on a crane and take this picture if there was a crane big enough. You could do it from an aeroplane. Yeah. It would still be a photograph.
Yeah.
You're still the one who, at that point, decides to press the button.
No, I'm just really interested in getting the conversation going because
Are you telling me that the biggest criticism that these people have is that you're not behind the lens?
No. But I think it's an interesting thread to follow because everyone's got a different opinion on it, right? And the point of these photos has always been to provoke a conversation. So I definitely want to make that point because it's not done to sort of aggrandize myself or enrich myself or any of that. It's been to provoke a conversation about what is representation. And what is the status quo that we're living in and how can we change it? That's the much bigger question that I'm trying to ask as an activist, not as a photographer. Hmm. The composite. So actually, an interesting anecdote.
This one of Tanzania, Mubs.
The Nelson Mandela Foundation was really supportive of my work early on.
Okay.
And the archivist, name's Vern, I was talking to him. Yeah. And I initially framed this project as, I'm doing air quotes here, an objective view on inequality in South Africa. And he...
Right, and by objective, you mean like from an object and also trying to see it from a distance.
Exactly.
Context, blah, blah, blah.
Right, like as if it was like a God's eye view. Yeah, this is an objective reality.
You're not saying me. I'm Johnny Miller, am objective.
No. Well, I was, though. That's the thing. That's what I'm trying to say. So he basically bitch slapped me.
Oh.
And he said, you need to own up to the fact that what you're doing is a subjective take on an issue that you feel strongly about. And that's what activist art actually is. And that at that point sort of changed my mindset of how I talk about the art and how I present the words that are associated with the art, which are also pretty important. I mean, I think if these photos stood alone without any of the context and without any of the written work, they wouldn't be as powerful. So I put a lot of thought and effort into sort of crafting how I speak about them in a particular way in a very subjective Johnny Miller take on inequality. And I think that's actually served me really well. So I don't know if I'm speaking to other photographers or artists in this podcast, but I think that's it's part of sort of finding your voice and then promoting that voice. I think that's really important as an artist because no one wants a wishy-washy artist. If you're going to step up to the plate and put an issue onto the table,
stand for something.
Then stand for it, right? And get behind it and defend it. And I think that's what I didn't realize at the time, and that's what I'm trying to do now.
Look, we talk a lot about the Gini coefficient in South Africa, this distance between poor and rich, which I think is just it's basically a human condition. It's the way all humans in the world are predisposed to be. You're either rich, you're poor. Obviously, some poor people become rich and some rich people become poor. So there's no way you can actually define this, but water seems to find its level, and in every society you have a certain degree of inequality. There isn't a place on earth where everybody's equal. If there were, it wouldn't be so much utopia as equal misery. So we've got this very unequal world, but what's interesting about your work, and just looking at where in the world you've been, is that it seems to be a fairly prevalent human circumstance. Whether you're in Mexico, or you're in Tanzania, or you're in South Africa, or you're in India. I mean, it just seems that, you know, inequality is a reality. So as much as it's activist art, how do you feel about inequality? And what do you feel we could do about it? I mean, like, we're talking philosophy now.
Well, I'm glad you asked, because I've done this art series for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I think if you can find a common circumstance around the world, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a natural state. It just means that it's a prevalent state.
Yeah.
And so I am not arguing, and I don't think that the world should be completely equal. I agree that that wouldn't be a system that would encourage social mobility, innovation, all these sorts of things that are so great in the world that give us all these products around
us. Or even deregulation of the skies for drones.
Well, I think that there's a serious skew in how neo-capitalist economies, South Africa among them, have decided to pursue paths that enrich the very, very rich, much more so than even the middle rich, and definitely more than the poorer classes. So in the States, I mean, in the research that I've seen, has shown in the U.S., the middle and the lower classes have actually lost ground, adjusted for inflation, since the 50s and 60s. So what that means, and actually since the financial crisis, since 2008, it's even sped up. So we thought in the financial crisis, once everything fell apart, that there was going to be this big sort of rejiggering of the economic system around the world. It's actually stayed exactly the same, except for the richest, not even 1%, but 0.01 of the 1%. They're the ones getting richer now. And it's not about... It's not about communism. It's not about making everyone equal. It's about a fair playing field. It's about providing people opportunities that I believe in a human dignity realm should be deserved or should be presented to them. They should deserve.
And what do you think the main agent in making that happen would be? Individuals or states?
Definitely government.
You think so?
I'm all for grassroots organizations, and I know that they play a powerful role in civil society, especially in this country. I just feel like the issues that you see in my photos, those are issues of infrastructure, mm-hmm. housing, the economy. Those are things that the state needs to intervene in.
And so, a lot of those inequalities were created by our previous government.
Well, of course. I mean, they're created by a previous government, but
willfully put together by state actors.
Definitely. One of the most impressive, and I use that in a horrible sense, impressive things about the photos that I've taken is the fact that apartheid planners of cities like Cape Town and Joburg were so ruthlessly efficient in how they did their jobs that people find it very difficult to break out of those efficient systems, right? And that's efficiency of control. That's right. All I'm saying right now. If you look at Alex right now, it's a perfect square. It's beautifully laid out. It's horrible in what it contains. And I have a new project actually coming out that I'm working on right now on the hostel system and how that continues to this day. I mean, you still see hostels all over the West Rand, the East Rand, Kimberley, even in Cape Town, around mining firms, mining consortiums. Yeah. They still use that sort of... shape, that typical hostile shape from the air, which I think is kind of beautiful in a sick way. So I think it's going to also be like unequal scenes where you look at it and you go, wow, that's a beautiful photo, but what does it represent?
Well, you've made a hell of a noise, man. You've made a large splash in South Africa and all over the world. In fact, it's worth mentioning that you've been featured on BBC, CNN, Der Spiegel in Germany, The Huffington Post, Sunday Times, and your past awards include first place at the 2017 Istanbul Photo Awards, Nature and Environment category, then the winner of the Center 2017 Project Launch, the Juror's Pick at the Emerging Talent Awards 2016. It's a long list of awards, man. Very well done to you.
Thank you.
It's very impressive stuff. Go and take a look at unequalspaces.com.
Unequal scenes.
Unequal scenes, sorry. Unequal scenes.
I'm gonna go back in time and change that because that's literally what everyone thinks.
We can edit it.
Unequalscenes.com. Yeah,
we'll just edit that up. I'm kidding. We're not gonna.
It didn't happen.
Unequalscenes.com. Go and take a look, and you can see this great work. So thank you very much for coming to see us, Johnny. Thank you. Johnny Miller, everybody.
This is CliffCentral.com.